Penguin Random House Audio presents America and Iran, A History, 1720 to the Present, by John Gasvinian, read for you by Fred Sanders. To my parents, of course, who lived too much of this history. When the lingering sorrow of separation lifts, the nightingale will tear back into the rose garden, its throat filled with song. Hafez, 14th century Persian poet. The Iranian Revolution is a fact of history, but between American and Iranian basic national interests, there need be no permanent conflict. Ronald Reagan, President of the United States, November 1986. Introduction. For a historian, for any storyteller really, the challenge is always where to begin. Does the story begin on the day the star-crossed lovers meet? Does it begin, as it does in the immortal poetry of Omar Khayyam, on the secluded riverbank, with a jug of wine and a loaf of bread, and that moment of blossoming, freshly emergent romance? For those telling the story of Iran and America, alas, it does not. This is a story that always seems to begin at the very end, at the moment when swords are drawn and voices are raised, when tempers are flaring and the lovers have gone their separate ways. In the United States, so often, the story begins in 1979 with those famous grainy television pictures, the bearded revolutionaries climbing the wall of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and taking 66 Americans hostage, leading them blindfolded and bewildered into the street for all the world to see. It begins with a radical, hateful, anti-American revolution, and all the menacing symbolism and fanatical Middle Eastern bloodthirst that image conjures up. The very moment that America and Iran broke off ties, the moment that ended more than a century of warm and friendly relations, has become Day 1, Chapter 1, Verse 1, the Book of Genesis. It is an odd way to write history, this, beginning at the end. But this is the way the story is told in the United States. A catalog of Iran's sins, ranging from support for terrorism to pursuit of nuclear weapons, generally follows in the 1980s, 1990s, and 2000s, with the accusation that all these activities stem ultimately from the radicalism of the Islamic Republic that was created 40 years ago, and the ideology of hatred and hostility it has cultivated ever since. The Iran hostage crisis of 1979 has become a kind of original sin, the moment the serpent slipped into the Garden of Eden and brought an end to the comfortable illusion of American global invincibility. The unforgivable has become the unforgiven, and nothing has been the same since. In Iran, meanwhile, the story usually begins in 1953, with an original sin of a different kind. It begins with Mohammad Mossadegh, a name largely forgotten by Americans, but a national hero to many Iranians. It begins with that hot afternoon in August 1953 when the CIA engineered a coup against Mossadegh, the elected and wildly popular Prime Minister of Iran. It begins with the thugs and newspaper editors who were hired by the CIA to create trouble on the streets and give the army the cover it needed to remove the Prime Minister. Mossadegh, a great admirer of democracy and human rights, had represented the hope of a generation. It was a generation that had adored America, a generation raised on years of John Wayne movies and big stylish Chevrolets, but that quickly grew to hate it. Another ending, treated as a beginning. This is the way the story is told in Iran. After the 1953 coup, Iran's young king, the Shah — Shah is the Persian word for king — returned from a brief exile, and spent the next 25 years increasing his dictatorial grip on the country, bolstered by billions of dollars in weapons and training from the United States. His feared secret police jailed and tortured thousands. The royal family pilfered spectacular sums from the Iranian treasury. Corrupt courtiers engaged in a lavish and opulent lifestyle, as one American president after another toasted the Shah for his steadfast friendship. And then, only then, in 1979, did the hated and hollow regime finally collapse, brought down by millions of revolutionaries streaming through the streets, a handful of them so angry that they seized the U.S. Embassy and took its employees hostage. So it has remained for 40 years. History, like almost everything else, has become a casualty in the long-running war of words between Iran and the United States. For more than 40 years, those who like to look for someone to blame or something to defend have stood in their respective corners, trading accusations about the relative criminality of the CIA coup and the embassy hostage crisis, taking very little interest in the idea that there might be a richer, more sophisticated way to look at the history that has transpired between these two nations. For more than 40 years, history has been treated as a competitive sport, just another arena of contestation in the seemingly endless array of disagreements and accusations that have been hurled back and forth between Iran and the United States. And for more than 40 years, endings, ruptures, and angry disagreements, rather than beginnings, attractions, and initial infatuations, have become the starting point for every conversation about Iran and America. We are all much poorer for it. The history of U.S.-Iranian relations did not begin in 1979, and it did not begin in 1953. It began hundreds of years ago, when the United States was still a handful of British colonies, and Iran was still known to the outside world as the Persian Empire. And it began with something much more interesting than hostile acts and mutual accusations about original sins. Iranians have always called their country Iran, but for centuries, Europeans, and later Americans, erroneously referred to it as Persia, a reflection of the facts that the Persians were historically the most dominant of Iran's many ethnic groups, and that it was the Persians who had created the first Iranian empire in the days of Cyrus and Alexander. This confusion is understandable, but it is somewhat akin to referring to France as Gaul or to Italians as Romans. In 1935, Iran formally declared its desire to be known as Iran, not Persia. In order to avoid confusion and awkwardness when quoting from contemporary Western sources or discussing institutions with names like the Anglo-Persian Oil Company or the Persia Mission of the American Presbyterian Church, I have mostly chosen to use Persia and Persians when discussing events before 1935 and Iran and Iranians for events after 1935. When we choose to take this long-term approach to history, we discover something surprising. For hundreds of years, it turns out, well before their governments had any serious high-level interaction, the peoples of Iran and America looked at each other with a remarkable degree of fascination, admiration, warmth, and benevolence. In the 1720s, colonial American newspapers wrote at length and with great sympathy about the political affairs of the Persian Empire. In the 1790s, Thomas Jefferson and John Quincy Adams studied Persian history as they looked for inspiration and guidance on how to run their new nation. From the 1850s to the 1920s, Persian newspapers constantly urged their readers to learn from America's example and develop their country into a progressive, prosperous constitutional republic. In 1919,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?